Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. Corolla Drinks fans, 2021 has arrived, and our mission from here on out is to make up for the miserable year that was 2020. The Corolla Family Barbecue was canceled, Mangria bar crawls were off the table, and any and all new products we wanted to roll out were put on hold. This year, that all changes. Case Club members from last year can look forward to a better Corolla Family Barbecue with more food, more booze, and more special musical guests. Plus, a signed bottle of Adam's new whiskey, 818 Rye. The barbecue is sold out, but if you decide to stay in this most exclusive club, or you're a first-time buyer, we're happy to announce the Mangria Bar Crawl is back. That's right. The Friday before the barbecue will be packed with buses, booze, Lynette, and your favorite lackeys. This Corolla family weekend will be one you'll never forget. For the 3 and 6-pack tiers, we've got you covered. Along with your shipment, you'll receive a New Year Fixed Everything t-shirt featuring Adam amongst the rubble of the City of Angels. For more info on 818 Rye and the Wine Club tiers, head to CorollaDrinks.com and help us make 2021 a year to remember.
Well, in this Reasonable Doubt, we take a deep dive into the Chauvin Floyd jury selection situation over there in Minneapolis. Very interesting takes on that from one Mark Garagos. Again, the jury, it's won and lost in the jury selection, and Mark has very strong opinions about some of the jurors that were selected. We get into the Cuomo case as well with some pretty controversial thoughts on both our ends. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, you do one or the other. How about you take your automotive policy and you bundle it up with either your homeowner's or your renter's insurance? And Geico makes it so easy to do. You can get a quote. You go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save and just how easy it is when you go to geico.com. That is geico.com, and get your bundle on.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but get on. Mandate, get on. Welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. It's Mark Garagos in Palm Springs.
I'm channeling my inner retiree and down here in the city of Palm Springs, sitting in the Gigi's restaurant, wondering why it's not open right now. But that's a different discussion.
Well, I was watching Joe Biden's speech last night as you hear this or as we record this. And I think we're just living in two different Americas. Like, he's like, if everyone masks up, if everyone socially distances, if everyone is vaccinated, then maybe by July 4th, we'll be able to have small gatherings in our backyards again. And I'm looking at this codger speak, and I'm like, I was in Oklahoma City 2 weeks ago playing packed clubs, not a mask in sight, going out to steakhouses, staying in hotels, driving in Ubers, and flying on airplanes. It's fucking open. If you go to Oklahoma City, it's wide the fuck open already. What do you mean maybe we'll be able to go into our backyards in July?
Well, you'll be happy to know that in my backyard in July, we're going to have Tenny's wedding. So I told Tenny, maybe he was just speaking directly to her, that we're going to be wide open for her wedding, because I don't want to write one more check for a caterer or a rental place if they're still not going to be open. And mind you, the businessmen are very smart. They have realized that at any moment, somebody could flip on a dime. They want 100% up front. Nobody's taking down payments.
Oh, really?
For July. Oh, yeah. California, businessmen have gotten very smart here. Although, I'm not really worried, and I'll tell you why. Because all of a sudden, Gavin Newsom is opening up as fast as he can. As soon as the recall signatures hit over 2 million, it's damn the torpedoes we're opening up. I don't know if you've noticed, but there was a little meme that things were opening, the red tier, the purple tier, whatever tier, as it was 1.5, 1.6 million, 1.7 million, you've noticed that things are opening up without any data or science. And by the way, since they had no data or science to begin with in the first place to justify anything they were doing, why do they need it now?
Oh, they don't. I mean, it's all arbitrary when he goes, well, we can't open if we're at more than 7 cases per 100,000. And then some point he's like, oh, make it 10 cases or make it 9.5. I mean, who gives a shit? You're just fucking shitting numbers out of your ass, you imbecile. And if I hear another politician, I wanted to fucking heave in my mouth watching Biden do that thing, which is that thing where people, if I hear another fucking politician go down this road, which is they do this move where they go 570,000 Americans. Those are mothers, fathers, grandparents, teachers, truck drivers. Yes, we get it. The people who are alive had a position. Podcasters. They never mentioned podcasters.
But I noticed podcasters. But by the way, in your little, you know, podcaster, I don't think does you, I think it does you a grave disservice because you took on UTLA. Now, mind you, years ago, I had Rafe Esquith, who was Teacher of the Year, who, you know, I chronicled on here the fights we got into over teacher jails and trying to eliminate teacher jails and the craziness that's the UTLA. And I never understood what the hell they were doing. And I had to litigate to get them to back down. Finally, we get the LAUSD to back down. UTLA was nowhere. You just started a crusade. They tweeted at you a couple of times and then they folded. I mean, that was the quickest cave I've ever seen.
Well, they're cowards, and what they rely on is people's fear. You know, there's some sort of weird reverence they think we all have for teachers. I'm a product of the LA Unified School District. Most of my teachers sucked ass. Most all of them were fucking incompetent. Somewhere between, you know, indifferent and incompetent. So I got a front row seat to your LA Unified School District heroes, and most of them were fucking worthless sacks of shit. I mean, I remember Mr. Diliberti. I remember Mr. Hansen. I remember, look, my counselor, Mr. Tomey, was a sack of shit. Don't give me this hero shit. I've been there. I've lived it. Number one. And I left LA Unified functionally illiterate. So,
well, didn't you? Well, your dad's a teacher, right?
Strike three.
My mom was a teacher. Paulette was a teacher. Paulette was at LA Unified, but then got drummed out because she took a string, I think, and tied one of the students to his chair because he wouldn't stop leaving his chair. And that became a thing, and she was drummed out of the teaching profession after that.
But you'll like my tweet. And this is how you get people to go away.
Can you set it up, the tweet? Because I don't think people realize the idea that this – how many members is their union? It's tens of thousands,
right?
Last time I looked. And they were so concerned over you that they were tweeting directly at you.
Right. Now, here's the deal. A, I don't really have nerve endings. And B, I don't know how technology works. So I'm the worst person to try to shame in the Twitter sphere. But I just said, I think this is, I said about 3 weeks ago, and put your attorney hat on, Mark, and tell me if you can find fault in this tweet. I said, at this point, teachers not going back to work means either they don't want to go back to work or they're cowards. There are no other choices at this point. They took great umbrage to that. But is there a third category I'm aware of? It's either you don't want to go in or you're a fucking coward. What else could it possibly be? Everyone else has gone back to work.
Well, and I'm loath to do the causation thing or the correlation thing and, you know, the fallacies that surround that. But it sure seems like as soon as you started kind of putting out there the you know, stupider liar, you know, it's a version of your version of you, stupider liar. It gathered momentum awfully quick. And then there were a couple of exposés, one of which was somebody leaked the memo. I don't know if you saw this, where they advised teachers that if they're on vacation in Mexico, I think they actually said Mexico, don't post any selfies or something because, you know, we don't want anybody to see. And then somebody else leaked out that they were going to use race or invoke or inject race into this as kind of a wedge to get them to not come back to work. So that it kind of cascaded out of control almost immediately. And then next thing you know, they finally agreed to come back.
Yeah. Come back at the end of the school year. To just cap the tweet clapback discussion we're having, because Mark loves my sassy tweet. So
I really do. I'm a fan of the sassy tweet.
He liked the tweet where someone accused me of sitting in my $7 million mansion, and I just wrote back 7.3. The teachers union.
That's one of my all-time favorites, by the way.
The teachers union accused me. Now, they got the information right. They accused me of sitting in my $7.3 million mansion.
Yeah, and they got it right with La Cunada. Well, by the way, the city of La Cunada should give you a shout out, because then didn't you come back with a mansion in Malibu too?
I told them I was in my mansion in Malibu when I tweeted that out.
Yeah, there you are. Right. I see it. There.
Another correction. I love that these fucking cowards are trying to inject race into everything. And also this notion, I who create jobs, I, who have 25 plus employees and nobody has missed a payday since the pandemic, this notion, and the teachers who create nothing, the notion that they would clap back at me and accuse me of like sitting in my mansion. I just love their version of rich people. I was probably in Oklahoma fucking City doing four shows when they accused me of sitting in my mansion.
Well, I was going to say, compared to Drew and me, Drew and I were having a wonderful dinner with Susan and a couple of the others in New York City. And we were trying to reach you, but we couldn't because you were working. I said, leave it to Adam to be working on a Saturday night. And we're sitting here at Scarpetta's, you know, whining and dining ourselves.
Well, the good news is according to Biden, as early as July, you may be able to go back out to eat with Dr. Drew, and I may be able to go back and play a packed club in Oklahoma City. So we got that. All right, the Chauvin trial.
This is fascinating to me. The Chauvin trial, for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that they're televising it, which I always think, and you've heard me talk about this, I think is a good thing in a case like this, what I call a supersized case, because there's so many kinds of twists and turns that people don't really understand. Well, the big news so far this week was that the Minnesota Supreme Court rejected the appeal from Chauvin's lawyers, who on the reinstatement of the third degree murder charge. So the appeals court, in a separate case to start off with another officer named Noor, and that the factual situation in Noor was Noor and his partner were sitting in a car. They saw somebody they had just heard, if you believe them, at roll call about somebody getting ambushed. Might have even been the ambush in LA. Then somebody came up to the car and he fired one shot, thinking that he was getting ambushed. Noor did. The officer, turned out it was an unarmed woman, killed her, was tried, convicted, I believe, of third-degree murder. And third-degree murder is basically, if you're in California and a lawyer, the equivalent of an implied malice second degree. And it's very nuanced in terms, and in fact, I think in the appellate opinion has said the same thing in the dissent. You tend to collapse the mindset, the mens rea, between manslaughter and murder when you have these kinds of implied malice or depraved heart type murders, where it's clear it's not intentional, and so you're trying to raise it up to an intent crime. So anyway, in Noor, they basically, the Court of Appeal had, to some degree, over in a divided opinion, said that you don't need to have it just directed, the act, at one person. And so now that can be, Chauvin can be charged with that. The judge agreed yesterday, as we're taping this on Friday, Thursday, to do that. And now they're in the middle of jury selection. And he's facing a third degree charge. People say, why would the defense have wanted him to keep the third degree off the table? Why wouldn't they want that in? And the thought process, he's charged with second degree. And that's a very high bar for them to convict on. And so the prosecution wants third degree, hoping that the jurors compromise and convict him of the third degree. And obviously, the defense does not want a third degree compromise. They want to get murder off the table and start talking about manslaughter.
Yeah, well, the nuts and the bolts, and the reason I think second degree is going to be impossible, maybe even third degree, is, you know, according to the autopsy, there was no bruising or damage to the neck area of Floyd. So that's tough. That's tough. They also have the fentanyl and other sort of cocktail of drugs in him.
Let me give you one additional fact. I don't know if you know, but apparently, if you believe what's written, I haven't looked at him yet, but it's been reported in the coroner's notes that he said something to the effect of, if Floyd had been found at home, he would have ruled it an accidental overdose.
Right. So that's tough. And
that's a fact they're going to have. Prosecution's got to deal with.
But here's another thing prosecution has to deal with. Chauvin wasn't going cowboy or rogue with the knee. That's part of their training. So if, in fact, he is following procedure of their training, that seems like one of the more. So there's a couple of, I mean, here's how I would couch it if I was defending Chauvin. I would say, we tried to get him into the car. He got in the car. We got him out of the car. He was saying he couldn't breathe while he was standing, you know, trying to get in the car or out of the car. And then the officer subdued him in a way that was consistent with his training. So how are you going to convict a guy who was essentially executing the training procedure for keeping a suspect subdued when he was merely using what? Now you can talk about the technique, and we can talk about removing that technique from the training of new officers. But if he's doing procedure, then why is he guilty?
Well, you know, this is why I love talking to you about these cases. You always get right. You've got a natural intuition for this, because I was thinking this week, you know, there's been legal skirmishes, the motion, what I call motions in limine, what they're called in California. I don't know what the nomenclature is for Minnesota, but how many of prior acts are going to come in? And I believe the judges ruled that at least two are going to come in of Chauvin's. Well, the problem with that is Chauvin, I mean, if I'm the defense lawyer, I kind of like, be careful what you wish for to the prosecution. I want the prior acts to some degree to come in, because I'm going to argue the very same thing. I'm going to say, wait a second here. Yeah, there were prior acts. He was still on the force. He was still in a command position. They didn't do anything to him. And by the way, I mentioned this before, every single one of these prosecutions, and I'm almost always in these cases representing the person who's left holding the bag, mainly the widow or the children. Every single one of these, when it's a criminal prosecution, the defense for the cop is going to have a use of force expert. And that use of force expert's going to come up there and say, no harm, no foul. This is the way they trained it. This is perfectly good. And that's exactly what he was supposed to do, what he was trained to do. And yeah, it's not pretty, but that's what ends up happening. There will be a guy who testifies to that for the defense, I guarantee you.
Well, again, I'm a layperson, but if somebody is executing a technique that they received in training to do their job, whatever the job is. I mean, if it's an airline pilot, what if it's just an airline pilot and he said, look, when the plane loses its left engine, you got to go full right rudder and put the flaps at 30 degrees. And the guy did it and the plane crashed. You still would say, well, the pilot was, and you'd say, well, the pilot has murdered all these passengers, but the pilot would say, I was just doing what I was trained to do in this situation, and I didn't make it up. I learned it in pilot school. That's
yeah,
what
well,
you trained
kind
me
of the
to
Boeing,
do.
That was the Boeing Dreamliner defense. Basically, the pilots are saying they never told us that there was going to be this problem upon takeoff, blah, blah, blah. We did exactly what we were told to do, and, you know, the sorry, Charlie, there was nothing we could do. I mean, there a lot of what is happening in this Chauvin prosecution by the prosecution, and it's being prosecuted by the Attorney General's office. I am perplexed as to what's happening. And remember, during Trayvon, you and I used to talk too. I never understood what the prosecution was doing in Trayvon Martin. I was saying, by the end of jury selection, I said, in fact, Mark O'Mara, who defended George Zimmerman, I said at one point on air that the only way Zimmerman loses this case is if O'Mara trips and hits his head and has brain damage, because I didn't understand what they were doing during jury selection in that case. And I'm seeing the exact same thing happen during jury selection in this case. I don't understand, you know, each side gets what's called peremptory challenges. That means a challenge you can use without any explanation. There are limits to that, which are called Batson, meaning you can't use it for a racist purpose. But at the same time, the prosecution still, I believe, has 9 peremptory challenges in this case, and the defense has 15. So there's a game of chess that goes on. Do I use it now? Do I pass? Do I let the other guy use it? Blah, blah, blah. The judge has taken a little bit of the strategy out of that because they are doing individual voir dire of each juror. So they're not doing the whole panel as a whole. They're doing it one individually. You either have them removed for cause, exercise a peremptory, or that's your juror. Well, so far, some of these jurors, and I sent Gary kind of the summary list of it, I would say are about as pro-defense as you're going to find. And I don't understand what the prosecution is doing.
Well, let's see how we can do that, because Mark always says that, you know, the trial is won and lost in jury selection. But then, obviously, unless you're Mark Geragos or Dr. Phil, you're not really, I say Dr. Phil because that's kind of used to be his business, the mock trials and all that.
I was on this morning with Joellen Demetrius. I think Joellen is probably one of the best jury consultants. I've done 2 cases with her, and I rarely will use a jury consultant. Joellen, I make the exception for. I think she's outstanding. And she was being, as Joellen is, she's always extremely sweet and complimentary and never says a bad word. But even she, I think, was a little perplexed as to what they're doing.
Well, so because we don't know the difference between a male and a female or black or white or middle-aged or young when it comes to selection. So for us, it just seems like random people. But there is a science to it that it's nuanced, but there's a lot you can learn going in just based on many of these different variables. So what was your thought? I think it's,
well, let me tell
they
you,
have 6 so far.
They've got so far, I believe they've got 7 jurors were questioned on Wednesday. 2 were seated, 5 dismissed.
Gary can read it if you want.
Yeah, Gary, would you? Because remember, one of the other things they have, and you can do this, it's if somebody's being honest and you've run their background and you've got a questionnaire, and here they've got a fairly detailed questionnaire. I think it's either 13 or 16 pages, which drills down on all of the things you would want to know. And mind you, you can, part of what you do when you question them, you've already, in all these trials where I have questionnaires, I've already done my research on them. I've already formed an opinion on them. I've ranked them internally as to where they are. What I use the questioning process for, and what smart defense lawyers do, is you use it to just make sure that this isn't somebody who wants to get on as a stealth agenda, stealth juror. And clearly, one of the ones who was on there is stealth. But Gary, you can get into the weeds here. You've got the article.
I do.
Which, by the way, I think it was a, give him credit, it was one of the Fox stations locally there, which has done a masterful job so far reporting on this.
Correct. It's Fox 9 in Minneapolis. So our first juror is juror number 2, a white man in his 20s who is a chemist and considers himself logical. He has not seen any of the videos of Floyd's deadly arrest, but he did visit the memorial at 38th and Chicago with his fiance. I think we might be getting into a little bit more of that later.
Hey, next. Yeah, let's just say one thing right there. This is where I would borrow from Adam, stupid or liar. If you think the guy went to the memorial but has not seen the video, that would be my first question out of the box.
Right.
Why are you at the memorial but you've never seen the video? I don't buy that for a second.
I don't buy it for a second either, especially if he's a chemist who likes logic. You know, he's probably an information guy, and his age. He's probably on the fucking internet all day long, and you couldn't avoid this video. He's going to say, I think he said that he and his fiance or wife were looking to purchase a home or something that was in the neighborhood. So I think he did a thing like you do with Anderson's split pea soup, which is like, well, as long as we're driving to wine country, we should stop.
Yes, and Adam, he has a fiance who's presumably around his age. To think that both of them have not seen it on the internet is, I can't fathom that. Our next juror.
I don't understand how you're on the internet. I don't understand how you go to the memorial. And I don't buy for a second that somebody who goes to the memorial has not seen the video.
Our next juror is juror number 9.
But wait a minute. So let's drill down a little bit. Sorry, Gary. So you hear this and you're selecting jurors, right?
Right.
And you think this guy's young, this guy's on the internet, so's his wife, they went by the memorial, he says he hasn't seen the video. When he says, I haven't seen the video, what are you getting from that? Are you thinking, well...
Stealth. Somebody who wants on the jury.
So he wants on.
He does apparently admit that he's seen photos of the
incident.
Right,
but why do you want on? By the way... Let me just tell you all you need to know about life. If you say to somebody, seems like you're drinking a lot, and they go, maybe I have a couple of beers a day, go ahead and make it a 12-pack. If somebody says, I've seen some photos of it, see, people don't like to lie whole cloth. They don't like to lie. They like to soften. You know what I mean? So a guy...
You are such a great student of the human condition. It's so true, because they always start off that way, and then when you question them, it's, you know, you drag them out. It's like you're doing a root canal,
right? So you say, are you an alcoholic? And they don't go, no, I've never touched a drop of booze. They go, yeah, I have a couple of light beers a day. But that's how people lie. So he's like, I saw photos, I went to the memorial, but I didn't. But he is a stealth. Let's say he's a stealth. Whose side is he on? What's that? He wants to write a book?
I mean, you cannot have a stealth, because it's too hard, especially in jury selection. I don't care what kind of a spidey sense you have. It's way too difficult to leave on a wild card like that. I mean, you just don't know what the agenda is, what they're trying to prove. But I will...
All right.
I will tell you, if I'm the prosecution, it's a white male in his 20s. I have a little bit of problems with that.
You don't think he could possibly be woke and kind of see things could. Your way?
He could, but I'm the prosecution. It's too dangerous.
Okay. Continue, Gary.
Our next is juror number 9, a mixed/multiracial woman in her 20s, originally from northern Minnesota, who said she was excited to be summoned for jury duty, especially once she found out which case it was involving. Third is juror number 19, a white man.
Hold on. Can we say something? This is one of my favorite lines in jury selection, which I always call jury deselection. But who's excited when they get jury summons? I don't know anybody who's excited. Do you?
No.
No. Nobody. I mean, do you know how many calls from people that both Adam and I dearly love? How do I get out of jury selection? I say, just tell them that you know me. That's how you get out of jury selection.
Which, for the record, I've used.
Well, I would say...
Yeah, I was going to say, Gary knows from personal experience. It works well.
Yeah, or just say you like Mark. If you say you dislike him, you may stay in the pool.
If you say you dislike me, you're going to stay.
Right. Sorry. So just lie and say you like Mark.
How dare you? All right. Our third is juror number 19, a white man in his 30s who is an auditor and describes himself as honest and straightforward. He apparently has a friend who is a Minneapolis police officer, but has not talked to him about the case or seen him since the pandemic began.
Hmm. So why are these feeling dangerous to you from the prosecution standpoint?
Because I just think that when people are leaning over backwards to get on the jury and saying the things that are obvious to me, that they're pro-prosecution, you know, that they're going to give the prosecution a fair shake, that's the most dangerous juror there is for the prosecution.
So by saying I'm going to give the prosecution...
Right. I'm saying to the prosecutor, it's got the bells and whistles go off on something like this. It alarms me.
Do they give out these people's names, or are they ever going to do that?
No, they're anonymous. And I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I think jurors should always have their anonymity protected. And I think the only way you ever get a fair trial in a high profile, supersized case like this is they need to be sequestered once the trial starts. You can't have them going back and forth in the community. That's right. Just makes no sense.
Continue, Gary.
Okay, our next is juror number 20, a white man in his 30s, originally from central Minnesota. He works in sales and is planning to get married May 1st, but accepts that the wedding date may get pushed back. He is apparently friends with one of the listed witnesses, a Bureau of Criminal Apprehension forensic scientist.
This one is interesting. What do you think of that? I want to hear what you think of that.
I do not understand enough about this dynamic to confidently weigh in on what direction these people may go, because it's so nuanced. But I agree with you. If someone is saying in advance that I'm going to give them a fair shake, you know, your mic's hot, Gary. I'm going to give the prosecution a fair shake. That's saying that's saying something.
What you have to understand is, in this case, and there's so many cross currents working at it, and you and I should work through this because we're going to have weeks and weeks to do it. But it would be interesting to know on that particular juror how he answered the question, do you agree with defunding the police? That's one of the questions on this questionnaire. I would like to know that.
Well, if I'm the defense, here's all I'm really interested in. How much are you influenced by the zeitgeist of society, the movement, and where we're at politically? So here's my feeling if I'm the defense. If I can get 12 jurors in there and completely in a bubble, let's just say I had a magic wand and there was never a news story about this case. There was never a riot. There's no Black Lives Matter. There's no anything. It's just 12 people sitting there, and I'm going to present the evidence. I would feel very confident that I could get those 12 people to see it my way with the evidence that we currently have. But the problem is how many of them are going to give way to the winds of society, whichever way they're blowing. I mean, because I think if this person was born the day before, never saw footage, never heard of it, never seen a neighborhood burning on CNN or any protesting or anything of that nature, just purest driven snow, I should be able to convince them to see it my way as the defense with the evidence that we're aware of. But because they're human beings and because they have to re-enter that society and go about their lives and deal with, you know, whatever's online and the very, very strong cancel culture and sort of beyond, they're going to be influenced to some degree. So if I'm the defense, I'm saying we don't really have to overcome the evidence. We have to overcome this percentage that people are influenced by society at large, which is inescapable and has been present for the last year, you know, or almost year since the events with Mr. Floyd. So for me, I would be looking for older people who were less involved with less questions. My questions would be, do you tweet? How often do you tweet? Are you on Twitter? How many followers do you have? How active are you on Twitter? Because you show me someone who's active on Twitter, I don't want that person. That person's going to be destroyed if this thing doesn't go right.
We're exactly right. And by the way, the older you get, the more correlation there is to being a property owner, and property owners take a more jaded view, so to speak, of this whole the cross currents that are going on here. Property owners also, I bet you if you did some kind of a study, there would be a correlation you could find to the supposed defund the police and that whole characterization or what I call character assassination of changing the priorities of law enforcement. I mean, we could get into a whole different discussion on defund the police, which is a caricature, I think, of what it should be. I mean,
right.
you and I have discussed for years this whole idea of if they had a budget and had to live with that budget as if they were in private enterprise, you would never see policing the way that we see policing. But I think you're right. I think it's very dangerous for the prosecution to leave on a lot of these. I mean, I'm just looking, Gary, keep going. I'll give you, Gary, you were at what, juror number 9 or 19?
Well, I'm not.
That was juror number 20 who we just did, but we have two left. But
here's,
go ahead,
if I'm the defense, here's who I want. I want 63-year-old diesel mechanic with a flip phone. I would literally want to know, what phone do you have? Do you have the iPhone 12? You tell me you have the iPhone 12, I don't want you if I'm the defense. Is there 12, Gary?
Oh, yeah.
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 12 right. Pro, you're even more dangerous.
12 Pro. That just means you're spending your life on the internet. You're tweeting. You're Facebooking. I do not want young and woke if I am selecting jury as a defense. I want old flip phone. Maybe even one of those. I want to know if you have a phone that's bolted to your kitchen wall, you're in if I'm the defense. Sorry, go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, do you have a landline? Would be a great jury question. All right, our second to last juror, at least thus far, is juror number 27, a black man in his 30s who works in IT management, married with no.
Now, hold on. Right there, you'd think this is somebody who's death for the defense, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Keep going, Gary.
He's married with no children. Prosecutors asked him what he thinks of the defund police movement, and he indicated he opposes the idea. There's one further bullet point here that I'm a little confused by. It says he immigrated to the U.S. 14 years ago, and then it says he moved to the U.S. in 2012, which was 8 or 9 years ago. So that one's a little confusing to me, but it's here, so I'll read it.
Right. You know, there's an interesting thing about immigrants. Kind of anecdotally observe this. There is a tendency, you remember, Adam, you will know this as a guy with a contracting background, NIMBY, not mm-hmm. in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
there is whatever the immigration equivalent of NIMBY is, I find that to be the case. Do you know, does that make sense to you?
Meaning, no.
I'm here, I got mine, I'm kind of anti-immigration now. I mean, the number of immigrants that I know or naturalized citizens that I know that have issues or are kind of, I'll give you a perfect example. I won't mention the names, but there are two people who I'm close to who are naturalized citizens who cheer on during the Trump administration all of the MAGA anti-immigration policies, which if had been employed at the time would have barred them from entering.
I think immigrants, I mean, look no further than Cubans in Florida. They're definitely more law and order than the average middle-aged female white professor at Stanford, for sure. I mean, they're more law and order than the average American.
I think if you've got, once again, we talk about the bell curve. You talk about a bell curve. They are as far in that kind of 10% end of the spectrum as anybody.
Yeah, there's a lot. I think the problem is many of them come from a place that has no law and order. And their thing is like, I could show you real problems. This is not a problem. You don't know what real problems are. And yes, we like law and order because we fled. You know, they're here de facto. They're not on vacation. They fled someplace that has trouble with law and order. So,
boy, you know, once again, you're so brilliant. One of the people I'm thinking about came from Beirut, and she tells me or has told me on numerous occasions how little sympathy she has for people and their issues. She says, grow up when you're 6 or 7 years old and you're walking over dead bodies after bomb blasts, and then tell me what your problems are now here when somebody is not, you know, has got a microaggression towards you.
Yes. If you ever speak to women from places where they treat women horribly, and then you go, hey, did you hear about Al Franken? He pretended to put his hands on the titties of a flak jacket. They go, get the fuck over it, bitch. We got real problems. So there are much less sympathetic than the average white woman who grew up in the United States.
Which will, if we have time left, we'll go to Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, because that would be a perfect segue into it. But Gary, can you do the last juror?
Sure. It's juror number 36. He's a Hispanic man in his late 20s. He works as a route driver, likes soccer and true crime podcasts, thinks media reports can be biased. On his jury questionnaire, he wrote that Chauvin was just, quote, showing off his authority, unquote, by continuing to kneel, but also felt Floyd could have avoided the situation by complying with police.
You're telling me if you're a prosecutor, Adam, you're going to keep this guy?
No. Well, just the fact that he likes soccer, for me, I would have, to get rid of him. Obviously, he doesn't think clearly. He's unable to put together thoughts.
And he, by the way, he can watch the most disjointed presentation of all and not have a problem with it.
It's also interesting because you break down things amongst race and amongst sex and things like that. I do not think in this current day and age, I feel like the Hispanics have some issues with the blacks. I do not feel like many Hispanics are big fans of blacks. I don't know how much that factors in to this case. And weirdly, well, not weirdly, but maybe a little surprisingly, a little more law and order and a little more traditional than we give them credit for. We think, you know, you take like Hispanics and you think, well, they would be for open borders and open immigration because it just mean more Hispanics. They're harder against it. Like you said, alluding back to,
there's a NIMBY,
they're harder against it as well.
Plus, you know, when you just say Hispanic, it's like saying Armo, you know, you have to know, is it a Barskahai, an Iranian Armenian? Is it a Beirutzi, a Lebanese Armenian? Is it a Hayastansi, and were they there during the Soviet Union? It's the same thing with Hispanics. You just cannot paint a broad brush, because you take a look at Florida, for instance. Florida, it's a different calculation if it's Cuban than if it's somebody else. And basically, any of your generalizations are only going to work on 80% of the data anyway. So, well, yeah, I'm with you. But when somebody, I'll just give you an example. This is the perfect one. When somebody starts talking to me that media reports can be biased, okay, that plugs right into fake news. And Chauvin was just showing off his authority. And Gary, that's a quote from the questionnaire, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Just showing off his authority. He's already minimized what it is. So how is he going to find that it's a depraved heart or whatever kind of definition for malice that you need for murder if he's saying he's just showing off? And he also felt Floyd could have avoided the situation by complying with police. How do you, if you're the prosecution, leave that guy on?
It's impossible. I mean, because what people do is they have a sort of confirmation bias. You know, you go, here's what I think. He's showing off. He's just showing off his authority. And, well, you know, Floyd... And that is a way of thinking. He could have avoided this whole thing if he just stayed in the cruiser. We wouldn't be here right now. Those are two thoughts that this guy's going to enter. He's going to enter the courtroom with those two pre-existing thoughts. There's no evidence that's going to convince him, especially when they're showing footage of Floyd getting back out of the car, especially when they're saying there was no bruising or damage to his airway or to his neck. There's no way you're going to convince him otherwise.
And which is exactly why we circle back to where we started, that jury selection you end with. I don't care how good of an orator you are. You could be the reincarnation of Clarence Darrow. You're never going to convince somebody who's lived in this planet. How old is this guy, Gary, who likes soccer?
No. He was in his late 20s.
Oh, is this the second
late 20s.
Guy?
So yeah. He's been here. He's lived life for almost 3 decades. Do you think in how long is this trial? 4 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever it is. You think you're going to change this guy's worldview in 4 to 6 weeks with your rhetorical skill? You've lost your mind if you think that's the case. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
All right. Well, let's get to Cuomo before we got to wrap it up, if you don't mind.
Boy, I mean, the knives are sharpening. I mean, it is I'm waiting for you because I haven't seen anything like this kind of pile on. How would you call it? He is... the chickens are coming home to roost. This is the definition of it.
Yeah, I guess there's now 6 women. Most of the stuff sounds fair to middling in the assault. I mean, I don't know. He went to a wedding. He wanted to put his hand on her back.
You know what the latest woman said?
This is a groping. Yeah.
No, the latest woman said he on several occasions told me what. You just roll out of bed. You didn't put makeup on. That made me feel very, very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Now the latest I think is he summoned
her. That's you and I and our white patriarchy,
right?
Just imposing ourselves on people.
Yeah. Let's try not to confuse my white privilege for your armo. With your armo, I don't know if you have armo privilege. I do not think you possess that. I'm not sure if it exists. I'm going to have to.
I may, but remember, I'm a shish kebab Armenian. I'm Armenian just on the outsider by name only. Actually, not even name only.
So there's not a lot of meat on that bone, But I think the latest one is he called her over the governor's mansion or whatever, and there was a groping thing, which sounds more serious than a lot of the other stuff we've been talking about.
I didn't hear about the groping. I heard he called her somebody over to the governor's mansion, asked her to come and help him with the computer, and supposedly he implicitly asks people to wear high heels and to wear makeup. And because she had to lean over to use the computer, that she felt very uncomfortable.
Well, here's a very dangerous zone. I'm not a Cuomo fan, and I think they should be going after him for the nursing home situation. But as it pertains
to... Yeah, but that's never going to... You know, putting, you know, sending off people to go die, that's not...
No, this is a bigger issue. Here's this... Here, I'll tell you the scary part of this and from how it impacts society. And I'll try to come up with an example. But it's sort of like saying, well... Is what's Cuomo being accused of? Is he being accused of rape? Is he being accused of assault? What did he do? And you go, well, he was inappropriate. He was at a wedding. He put his hands on her face. He wanted to kiss her. He was on an airplane and he was talking about playing strip poker or something. Like, he was inappropriate. He was inappropriate. And
he
then
asked to send over a sausage sandwich.
Right. Right. He did all the shit everyone's done from when it's put into context. Fine. Again, I'm not a fan of Cuomo, but I will defend this theory. And I'm curious what Mark thinks of this theory, because it's a scary theory. So somebody's saying to Cuomo, he didn't kill anybody, and he's not being accused of arson. But he did some pretty major jaywalking. He did some jaywalking. And so we go, okay, he did this thing. It was wrong. We'll put it above jaywalking, figure out he drove a little recklessly or whatever the metaphor is. Then what we do is we go, we just found another example of him jaywalking. And we found a third example of him jaywalking. And now there's 9 examples of him jaywalking, and now he has to go. But my feeling is you could get 200,000 examples of him being sort of creepy, but that doesn't make him a rapist. That makes him creepy. And the notion that these things are building up, well, building up, if nothing gets above a 3, then what is it really? Then what are we doing? So we're kind of saying this guy's an arch criminal because he's got 1,000 misdemeanors. And my thing is,
you
like,
know, I'll take it one step farther. My father used to have this joke about we lose money on every sale, but we make it up in quantity. This is the sociological equivalent of that economic theory. None of these things rises to the level. I mean, I read an article this morning. I don't remember if it was the New Yorker or the New York Magazine or whatever. And it was astonishing to me the level of kind of projection on somebody who felt uncomfortable based on retroactive revisionist history of something that is mind-boggling to me, that you would just, you know, look, I always think of things, and here's my implicit bias. Could I get this evidence into court? Could I get this evidence? Is this evidence admissible? Virtually everything that was in the article I read this morning, and I don't remember, I think it was New York Magazine, was astonishingly irrelevant, inadmissible, and had no evidentiary support. Yet, you're going to say that the governor of, and mind you, I'm no fan either, because I thought, since, by the way, you and I talked about this, you know, what, 11 months ago, that nursing home order was outrageous. And they're not focused on that. Nobody's focused on that. They're focused on these projections of somebody who was uncomfortable and now feels like they can take that uncomfortable unarticulated, purely subjective feeling and project it out onto somebody and deprive him of due process or his livelihood?
Gary?
Yeah, I just wanted to clean it up a little bit. The incident that Adam was referring to is a new accuser from yesterday who was summoned to his official residence to help him with a problem with his cell phone, and she has said that Cuomo put his hands under her blouse and groped her until she told him to stop. That has been referred to the Albany Police Department.
So that is something, and that's the worst one. Investigate.
Yeah, but she – I remember this one. Did I read this right, Gary? She did not make the complaint. Is that right?
I think that is correct, yes. Initially, it was not her, but she has been speaking since the complaint was made.
Yeah, I mean, this is – hello, folks. As somebody who defends cases, there but for the grace of God walk you. I mean, this is a dangerous, dangerous area for anybody to be the accused.
All right, a somber note to go out on. I am going to be playing this Friday and this Saturday. I'm going to be in Reno, Virginia Street.
Really? When are you going?
I'm going Friday, Saturday, 19th and 20th, Reno, Virginia Street Brew House. We've added a late show for Saturday, so I'm not heeding Biden's warnings about not traveling. I am back to normal, bitches. March 25th, two shows, West L.A., Jam in the Van, Speakeasy with Adam Ray and Dawson, and Loxie's going to be playing as well, and show in Nashville, Zanies, Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to do April 14th. So you just go to adamcarolla.com. I shall not be masked up in my backyard. I shall be touring the country and bringing mirth to the people. What do you got, Mark?
Well, you know, you mentioned April 14th. I'm thinking, depending, I'll have to talk to August because he's great at following the jet. I'm thinking of taking Big Boy on April, I think it's about that same weekend, to West Virginia to talk to the trial lawyers there. I may drop you in Tennessee and then come back and get you. I'm at the V.
Do not dangle that.
Don't tease me, Mark.
Don't dangle that beef in front of the hungry lion known as Mike August.
That is Mike August. We've got the V in Palm Springs. Come on by. I'm sitting in GG's right now as you speak. Prova is open in Grand Central Terminal and Moxie Hotel, Times Square. We've got Engine Company 28. The governor, because we've now passed 2 million signatures, is letting us open on Monday. And 10E, Mediterranean Tapas, come celebrate our worthless POS Secretary of State under the Biden administration, and I'll explain why next week.
All right. You'll be getting a call from Mike in the next 21 seconds. Until next time, this is Adam Kroll for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.
Well, do you own, do you rent your home? Probably do one or the other. And then you got your automotive policy. How about you bundle them up at Geico? Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners and renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing because you got so much to do already. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle on with Geico. That is geico.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.